This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Dr. Tony, great to have you here at Aston Villa. Aston Villa have been in a low moment in recent years. Is your ambition to get back to the Premier League, first of all?
Yes, and the yes.
And what would you say your long-term aim for Aston Villa is?
The greatest club in the world, a club taking the leadership of the modern new age. Maybe more than that.
The club won the Champions League in 1982. Is winning it again an ambition for you?
Why not? Maybe again and again.
Fantastic. And this club is big in Asia, but I know you expect it to be even bigger in the future. Do you want it to be the biggest club in Asia?
I'm sure it will be the biggest in Asia, and also, I hope, the biggest and the greatest in the world.
If you are really great and powerful, you'll keep your promises.
Do you presume to criticize the great Oz? You ungrateful creatures, think yourselves lucky. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. The great and Oz has spoken.
Who are you?
Oh, I am the great and powerful Wizard of Oz.
You are? I don't believe you.
No, I'm afraid it's true. There's no other wizard except me.
You humbug!
Yeah.
Yes, it's exactly so. I'm a humbug.
Oh, you're a very bad man.
Oh, no, my dear. I'm a very good man. I'm just a very bad wizard.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
We want a football club where the Football Association and the Premier League guarantees fan representation, or just anybody rocks up that's got money and buys a club. You can be a fucking absolute lunatic but buys your football club and runs them into the ground.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast show. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me, we're not quite at the funeral of Aston Villa, but we're on the way. It's Dan Rogers of the villaunderground.com. Welcome.
Hello, all. I should be on the beach tweeting transfer rumours. I'm not happy. I'm not happy about this at all.
We recorded a show shortly before the playoff final. Remember that? And the intro to that is the mood, let's say, is very different. I'll just play a little bit just to give you a hint of the show you would have got. Joining me this week, Dan Rogers from the villaunderground.com. Welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. We're going to Wembley. The outcome is assured. Premier League is back.
We're going to crush Fulham into dust.
Beyond dust, it would be like a universe-level implosion down to a speck. They're small, prawn-munching, paper-clapper-waving, Jack Wills-sponsored, Pimm's-sipping, Southern Softy...
Lager top.
Michael Jackson statue loving. Mother.
We're coming.
We're coming for you. We're coming for you.
No, we're gonna do this. We're gonna do this.
Yeah, we're gonna roll those bloody prawn munching, pink shirt tucking, loafer, squirrel stroking, liberal, green party voting, hummus and avocado smashed toast for breakfast, granola loving, Marks and Spencer. Smothering, living with their mothers, potato fritter abstainers.
Sorry, we're the team with the potato head as the manager.
We can't let them win, David. Come on, they're not even they're not a proper football club. They play football from a cottage, for God's sake. A cottage!
The good thing about the Villa kit this season is, if you own the home and away kit, you can turn up on the day wearing the home kit, everything's good. And if we lose, you can switch to the black kit for the journey back home.
For the wake.
Anyway, that was a different time. I mean, that was only, what was it, like 2 weeks ago? But it feels like 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's a short time in the Villaverse, isn't it?
I mean, we'll talk about that game quickly just to get it out of the way so we can actually talk about it in the context of what happened next. When you're watching that game in the first 45 minutes where... It was like there was an electrical fence on the halfway line and some of the players didn't dare go across it. If you needed so desperately to win that game, and we know that Steve Bruce, Keith Wiener, Steve Round, Tony Jai, who was there, all knew what was at stake. I mean, they all knew the accounts, the wages they were playing, the fact they had no money. I mean, they would have known that before the playoffs kicked off, obviously, so... That could explain the caution against Middlesbrough. But you get to that final, 45 minutes, do absolutely nothing. And during a whole game, 20 minutes of it, you play 10 men. You don't even force one corner. Do you think they were just frightened because of the consequences?
Oh, the first half against Fulham, it was shades of the Chelsea 2000 Cup final. I think we froze.
Yeah.
That was the... Yeah. It was terrifying to watch because within about 10 or 15 minutes, you know, you get the whole... You get wrapped up in the atmosphere of Wembley and the occasion. And then it started to dawn a bit for me that we... By half-time, I was quite worried. And then you start trying to convince yourself that, you know what, the gravity and the stature of the match, obviously, but this is before we were aware as a club and a fan base of the financial problems that were simmering under the surface here.
Saying that, to caveat that, we always maintained over the last 2 years of this podcast that it's promotion or failure.
Or failure, yeah.
That's the choice here. You know, you see some fans saying, well, you know, Bruce has got the team spirit back and, you know, we finished fourth, we come back. It's like, no, that's not what's at stake here. It's because of the finances, because of what's been spent, you have to go up. It's promotion or bust. And, you know, that's the saying, promotion or bust, but it's also the reality. And it's all well having good team spirit so they can bump into each other on their holidays in Greece, as, you know, Chester and Terry did, and Grealish bumped into Chester. I mean, great, have that team spirit, but where's that team spirit on the pitch when Grealish has got the ball running at three or four Fulham defenders? There's nobody running either by the side of him or actually running in front into... There's so much space there. Nobody's making runs to take any of those players away from out of Grealish's path. And people were like, you know, they were so frustrated. There was a few half-time team talks, put it that way. They could have just taken them out of the crowd and played them to the players.
I think it will go down as one of the more limp Villa displays. And I think that it's all the things that you don't want as a fan, really, because it's televised. It's a big occasion of and a big failure that's visible to a lot of teams. But you couldn't say even when, especially when Fulham went down to 10 men, that was the moment where you thought, surely now we will galvanise something. And it didn't happen.
Normally, there's hope. You're 1-0 down.
Yeah.
You're against 10 men, but you've got 20 minutes in the bank. Now, if that was Manchester United or Liverpool or Chelsea, you'd be like, no problem, 2-1, 3-1. But because it's Villa and we've seen what happens, and not because it's Villa, sorry, I'd rephrase that, because it's Bruce-managed Villa, And we saw against Middlesbrough in the first time we played him when Traore got sent off, was it 3-4 minutes? And we failed to really impose ourselves and it finished 0-0. Now, that thought was very much in my back of my mind, I have to admit. And Fulham, they basically did to us in that, let's say, that final stretch, what we did to Middlesbrough. It was like a boxer knowing they've won it on points already, so they just need to be smart and box to the end.
I don't want to pick on individuals, and sorry to jump in, but I did also think during the game that in some of the games where we managed to grind out victories, individuals played very well. You know, maybe it was the team ethic, maybe it was to the game plan, if you like. So your Snodgrasses of the team contributed quite a lot. But fast forward to Fulham, a better footballing team, more organised. Yeah. I thought players like, I mean, Snodgrass had probably one of his poorer games in a Villa shirt. I thought that Adoma was pretty true to form as he's been for the last, as he was for 6 to 8 weeks before. And for the Fulham goal, for all the admirers that Hutton has, his positioning was...
It was like going back to the Premier League performances where he was always ball watching. Well, imagine no
if Neil Taylor had done that. You know, I think that there'd have been a closer examination of the goal that ultimately cost us, really. I don't want to hammer in on one individual because I think that, you know, for that one mistake, we created nothing either.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. Hey. Come on, you Lions. We don't need the Premiership. I don't want to play in a posership anyway. It's like horrible division full of Judases. Anyway, so, yeah, come on, you Lions, man.
A lot of people have made this mistake of saying, oh, we're 90 minutes away or one goal away, you know, and everything would have been fine or everything would have been, let's say, swept under the carpet. But it wasn't just that game. That game was an epitome of what happened the whole season.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah, you're quite right.
But let's get on to what's happened. Which it's kind of been a financial meltdown of massive proportions that has you suddenly thinking the doomsday scenario that you never thought of was like, oh, Leeds will never happen to us, Portsmouth will never happen to us, you know, we'll just go straight back up. You know, people also forget about Blackpool. They were in the Premier League and they, you know, dropped to a massive crisis and they're still fighting that one. And Hull also have had massive problems with their owners.
I mean, we spoke off air and have done a couple of times since the news about the meltdown happened. And we take no pleasure in saying that I think we wanted to be optimistic, but we were cautious over the last couple of years and concerned about the lack of transparency around the financial situation of the club enough to... I wasn't surprised when I heard the news, but confirm this. I was shocked, as I think you were, as to quite how bad it was.
Yeah,
you know, we joke and we have a laugh. You know, we've got a character called Negatron because some of the things that we've said over the years have been perceived as scaremongering. Well, it's been a degree worse, actually, that to find out that the club, I mean, we'll get into the ins and outs in a few minutes, but to find out the club was 7 days away from being issued with a winding up notice is an astonishing position to be arrived at where, you know, to not have £2 million of liquidity in the club.
Yeah.
Astonishing. And...
And embarrassing for...
Hugely embarrassing. And
for the owner and the CEO.
Well, for an owner from a country where face is very, very important, I find it unbelievable. And I refuse to believe he could have been ignorant to what was going on. And I'm not sure what I'm more concerned about, that if he was ignorant, that's grossly negligent. If he was aware, he allowed us to get to that point...
Yeah.
Before doing anything about it. And that says to me that we were on a massive gamble towards the Fulham game.
But
remarkable.
I mean, if you go back over 2 years, there was a lot of... I mean, I wrote two or three articles about various suspicions about the actual buying process and who was involved. Mm. And the more you dug, and obviously, there's loads of people out there on Twitter, private detectives, when it comes to Villa... digging away, but if you know, used a proper filter and got down to the reality, and this Chris Samuelson, who, considering his previous trying to raise finance for Everton back in 2004 when Keith Wyness was CEO, that I think he was trying to get something like 12.6 million or something, and that kind of failed, and you know, he disappeared off into the sunset. Then he popped up again in 2010, helping a Russian, let's call him an oligarch because I can't remember his name, buy Reading, and that all went tits up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, when he popped up And people were generally, you know, national journalists were generally surprised that he was, let's say, allowed to lead the bull to the gate on this purchase.
So publicly as well.
Publicly as well. And, you know, we are talking picture of his name on a Villa shirt in the changing room. We're talking claret and blue tie. We are talking director listed on company's house. Fast forward, you know, he's over in India doing interviews on behalf of Aston Villa where they're, you know, allegedly opening an academy. And then he disappears. And then when Tony's asked about him, Dr. Tony's asked about him, he's whitewashed from the history. Oh, he didn't really have any part to play, just helped us on a couple of things on the purchase. Why would you go to the extent of making him a director? Why would you have him doing interviews on the club's behalf? I mean, that was the first stink that started to emanate from this kind of setup. And then you've obviously got somebody who's admitted that he looked at about 8 Premier League clubs. There was a Chinese company obviously looking at West Brom, and probably the one that, and I mean, I'm sure Dr. Tony had a look at it as well, but you know, he looked at Southampton, Everton, I know for a fact, and that was in the article I've written. I think if you haven't read it, I'll link it into the notes of the podcast. And they were doing their due diligence on Everton, and you know, asking to the extent of trying to get have meetings with MPs there to obviously hatch plans that permeated, you know, from obviously owning the club, and you know, the idea of, I think there was the football quarter was something that's
in Liverpool,
it's meant to link Everton and Liverpool and be the two stadiums. There'd be something you can obviously go to on match days and have entertainment and food, etc., etc. And that was something I know that Dr. Tony was interested in. And then that's obviously an idea, you know, that goes into his experience of smart cities. And that's something he wanted to be bringing to Birmingham once his interest turned to Villa. So suddenly, you know, you've got somebody who could have bought, and I think they looked at Swansea as well, but could have bought any one of, let's say, 8 clubs. And then suddenly when he arrives at Villa, he's the greatest Villa fan, and they come up with this cock and bull story about him. Oh, he once saw Villa when he was over here in Oxbridge. And I saw a TV interview with him, and somebody asked him that, and he was so unsure what to say that, you know, it just smelt. But that doesn't matter. I mean, Lerner getting a tattoo on his ankle. They do these things because they know a lot of supporters just take supporting their club on the face value. They just want to go and watch the game. They want everybody to love the Villa. They want to be told when a player signs that it's a great club, great history, and it's a big club, blah, blah, blah. You know, most people are operating on a low frequency. They're not interested in the club accounts, blah, blah, blah. So they're easy to manipulate in terms of the marketing. I mean, just look at the marketing through social media this year, and it's a bit OTT. Been a bit try-hard. I mean, we've been speaking about his Twitter presence since the start, which we knew would end him in look at his Twitter now and the kind of responses he gets. Even the sycophants have started to turn on him, and you know, these staged videos celebrating goals. I mean, we've mentioned these before, when he's going absolutely crazy because he's acting to a certain extent, and you look around and the people who you know you like, your ex players from the 80s, you know, Ian Taylor, whatever, you know, they'll give it a fist pump or whatever, as any other fan would be sitting down in that section of the grounds. And but you're not jumping up and going crazy, and it's almost like this is what they've seen people do when they see adverts of Sky TV or whatever, fans. It's like, oh, this is what we're meant to do, so we'll do it. So, you know, it's copycat behavior, and it's embarrassing. You can smell it when it's genuine. I mean, most Villa fans are born Villa fans, and our identity with the club is when we're kids.
Well, it's no different to the Collymore effect, is it? You know, Collymore, first and foremost, I guess, is a fan and has been vocal on this, but finds himself in the pickle, I suppose, of coming up with the classic, right, how many, let's work out how many Villa fans we've got, and let's times the debt by the outstanding balance. And then you find yourself trolled by the former Blues director, Pavlakis, saying that his plan was like Baldrick's cunning plan from Blackadder. And you think, oh, have we really reached the point where a former Blues director is mocking us?
And, you know, obviously Colin Moore's intentions are coming from that place of being a Villa kid, being a, you know, fan of Gary Shaw, and obviously having the pleasure of seeing a great team in that day. And that's the thing, you know, these people that just kind of just appear with their money and then pretend to be one of us. It's, you know, don't even do that. And the whole Twitter thing, you know, the fans all bought into it, the emojis and all that kind of crap. And it's kind of fun and people go for the ride. But you just know if this goes wrong, but, you know, we never expected it to go this so chronically wrong, because you didn't, because this is meant to be a successful businessman who owns four or five companies that work in cahoots with the government. And, you know, Chinese aren't known to be that reckless. Sure, I mean, corruption is obviously an issue there, but as we found out with wolves and how they got around the allegedly.
Yeah, but I mean, it's well documented that, take the Chinese dimension, that the wolves owner has been spoken to a couple of times in his homeland. You know, that's publicly available now. Nobody.
Yeah, that's 2015. I think that was when they were really getting clamping down. Sorry, this is the Chinese government on corruption.
And that led to, I mean, the change, the other thing that came in 2017, which is, I think, understood to an extent in the Twitterverse, if you like, around Chinese capital controls. But if you actually start reading and looking into how that works, and this idea that Tony couldn't get money out of China, well, that was for a short period in 2017, you know, that those rules and those regulations were relaxed. But having a better understanding of how the Chinese government treats individuals, especially those individuals who might be sat on Twitter in the UK saying, well, there's ways of getting around it, and then suddenly they can't. They don't appear to have as much, how should we say, the rules are slightly different for them. And I don't think it's any surprise to me that, one, the good doctor's Twitter activity has decreased.
Yeah.
His opinions on it have decreased, and his ability to perhaps move money as he previously could has apparently evaporated.
Just picking up on that Twitter thing. I mean, at the start, he called out...
2 years we were talking about this.
Yeah, calling out journalists who questioned his position. I mean, I was questioning his position, and he went all funny and unfollowed me. And I had actually said, I had no criticism in an article I wrote about him, saying he's put up the money and he's reinvigorated, say, the energy of the supporters and their interest. And, just the article, I think it was called, you know, What's Going Wrong at Villa. And, you know, he made a big fuss about it, and I think he retweeted it with comments about it, and all his comments were wrong. And just thought, what kind of chap is this? And then calling that guy a journalist who basically said, well, you know, I think it was Mike Scott, who used to write for The Guardian, and he's written for EPSN and Standard and whatever. But he openly mocked Tony and said, if you're here, still here in 2 years, which I don't think you will be, hats off to you. And that's when he got called a journalist. And then calling, you know, Ian Holloway a fucked pundit. And, you know, what happened there? Ian Holloway pretty much bang on with his prediction of where Villa would finish. But you don't expect that from an owner. But you don't expect that from somebody who's going to be a successful, and we're talking, you know, top-end businessman. Mm-hmm. It just didn't seem right. I mean, for example, you know, in my example, why is he so concerned with what one blog says about him? I mean, come on. You know, if the roles were reversed, I'd just be thinking, well, you know, that schmuck's entitled to his opinion, and that's about as far as it goes, even if I had read it.
Well, and knowing that as well in the context of, actually, there were more significant things to be worrying about.
Exactly.
Behind the scenes. You know, this was against a backdrop of Shah saying that, well, there's all that parachute payment money, don't worry about it because we haven't touched it. Well, we didn't have it just before the Fulham game when we needed to pay our tax bill. And this is where things begin to unravel for me, that, you know, it's easy to get wrapped up in news reports and fake news. But we sat before we started this podcast and just started listing things as fact. There's 16 really serious things that we managed to put together, weren't there? That, you know, we'll touch upon them across the podcast. We're not going to list them. Of chronic financial mismanagement of the club, as I would see it, and I'm willing to stand behind that. And those are all validated, verified facts. There's lots of stuff floating out there that I'm sure is clickbait rubbish, and I think that most people can see through that. But It's not all on the doctor, I don't think. I think that when you know, if we ever do get to learn the truth about the operational side from the chief exec, Wyness, you know, I think there could be culpability there too. But it seems to be, you know, it's the classic things, isn't it? That, you know, after the learner regime and all the things they learnt and the austere times that we had from that, and this idea under a new Chinese owner that we'd, You know, we'd be ambitious, but we'd be responsible. And it's history repeating itself 10 times worse. And, you know, for all of the issues we got close to with Lerner, you know, we were never insolvent.
Because, I mean, talking about Keith Wyness, who's obviously...
Yes.
I mean, you read some of the Birmingham Mail articles over the last few months, and they're still making out that Tony appears at most Villa games. And, you know, they're still trying to make him out to be this omnipresent owner, which is very far from the truth. So that leaves you with Keith Wyness as heading up Operation Aston Villa. And Keith Wyness is suspended. And, you know, over the last week, I've, you know, obviously spoken to all kinds of people from, you know, Stan Collymore to people actually at the club in, let's say, positions of no. And, you know, also, you know, proper journalists as well from the Nationals. And, you know, say people at the club, they go into work with Wyness suspended, and you're suddenly in a situation, well, who's running the show? Who's making the decisions? Because Dr. Tony will be filling in as CEO. Dr. Tony doesn't know that much about football, and obviously learning on the job. I mean,
but let's put it in the context of the running of a failing company.
Yeah, you know, that as well.
You've got a CEO there. You've suspended your CEO, and the timeline of particularly the beginning of our problems here is quite interesting to me, because though the news broke he was suspended on the day of the tax bill falling due and not being paid, Wyness had been suspended for a few days before that.
Yeah.
So they kept the lid on that. But the timeline, roll it back, our bill was due the day before the Fulham game, and that tells you the level of gamble. Who was on a plane out of the UK the next day?
Yeah.
You know? And hasn't been back since. That's damning for me. And like you say, that it leaves the club, irrelevant of what you think of Zai, rudderless when you do become aware that the CEO's gone.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I was saying, there's a commercial director, Lou Corgan, but he, you know, he's not a football man in terms of the day-to-days, so he can't suddenly, like, pick up the slack.
It's very tricky.
Now it's time for Twitter with Tony.
April 29th. It's been very intense, hard working several months, and finally getting days off for Labour Day break. Suddenly, so much missing Villa Park, a place you realise already became your pilgrimage. May 15th. Wembley, here we come. May 26th. Gutted. Sorry for all fans for this difficult moment. Have to stay stronger. Fucking, where's that flight to Beijing? May 29th. Still hurting, albeit from afar. Felt even more when you realise how much old people love the club, Gaffer, the whole squad, including myself. Have given everything, apart from money, but still didn't achieve our target, which is to pay a tax bill. Also, very difficult to verify people who's sending those bills, showing their real personality, looking at you, Keith, and humanity, still looking at you, Keith, at this tough moment. June 7th. It has been a very difficult 2 weeks, as I hinted earlier. I was almost heartbroken by something. Fucking tax bill. Tried my best to keep beloved AV move forward. Thanks for all people standing together, going through difficult time. It was all supporters encouraging words to keep me, us, stronger. July 31st. New sitting with Jar competition. Visiting times are Tuesday, 9 till 12, just mornings. They'll be high demand, I bet. I'm sharing with Big Keith. Lad's got top bunk. Sorry I can't make any games next season. All lads, hashtag OTV.
Word on the street about, you know, Dr. Tony is he's the thing that's upset him the most is, you know, he feels like he's been stabbed in the back by not only Wynas, but potentially other people running Villa. But this just sounds like somebody who's a distant owner, and it hasn't gone right, and then suddenly he's trying to throw people under the bus.
Well, we have to be careful. I mean, I'm trying to be careful here and trying to stick to the facts, and the facts can move, and I'm trying to stick to what seems to be reported through the national press and through the reputable sources.
Yeah.
But irrelevant of what you think of Wynas, and I think if we look back, I think Wynas's culpability may lie in perhaps not standing up to whoever was sanctioning the deals and the viability of them in the event that Villa didn't go up. But at the point at which Villa couldn't pay their bills, it seems that Wynas had to act in his capacity to get the club some financing.
Yeah.
Has he probably overstepped the mark? We don't know. I think that's where the grey area is, but he'll have known... the fact that we went with a begging bowl to Burnley, that's one of the fact-checked things. That's one example. He'll have been looking for capital everywhere, won't he?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to extend into the rumour mill around, looking around for unauthorised sales of the club and stuff, because that bit isn't verified. But I think it's fair to say that he was acting in his duty as the CEO to keep the club solvent or take the right advice if we weren't. And that's where the uncomfortable discussions around administration come in.
Yeah.
Because if you can't find the capital, there's only one other outcome.
Yeah, and desperate men do desperate things, and it's not necessarily indicative of them as being good or bad men.
No,
it's just the situation they find themselves in. But the initial issue is, obviously we're talking about massive debts here, and you're looking at, they weren't splashing the cash in the summer on transfer fees, but why are you paying Terry? Let's be conservative and say 50,000 a week. Mm. Why are you saying you've just brought Elmo as an extra right-sided midfielder to go with Adomar, but then Bruce is thinking, well, I don't really fancy Albert Adomar. We can get Snodgrass. Why are you bankrolling that when it's 40,000? I mean, I think his wages at West Ham were 60,000. We paid 40,000 of them. That's a luxury. And that was a third, right-sided player. Suddenly, why did you get James Bree in? Allegedly on 23 grand, it's been reported. And then not only not play him, but then bring in, spend more wages on Axel Zanzibar from Manchester United when Bree can fill those
staggering
positions.
It's when you're quite right, because what you're saying is it's the cumulative effect of all of these things.
Yeah.
And when you start to align them against the true costs, and these are the, we start to put them against the reported fact-checked figures, is that, the bill to HMRC that was due was 4.2 mil, but we know it's more in the region of 12 mil overall.
Yeah.
And in terms of, you've just been talking about your players, so the McCormacks, the Chesters of this world, we haven't even paid for them yet. We've got 11 million owing to Fulham, West Brom and Brentford. How? Hang on, where's the rest of the parachute money gone? Even against a backdrop of generating money, so take the Amavi transfer, that's £8 million of cash, of which we signed over to an Australian bank to get an advance. The money had dried up long, long, long ago. And just to go back to you finally on your point on wages, we were hemorrhaging money, at least £5 million a month deficit, at least. Who arrived at the decision that I get why you'd want to bring a Terry to the club?
Yeah.
But then factoring in the luxuries, as you say, where you've already got players in those positions.
You're kind of stockpiling players. So who's signing off on this? Because Wynas knows about this situation. Obviously, Steve Rounders, Steve Bruce does, the chairman as well. So have they got to the point where it's like, well, we're buggered? And I think they knew, I'm sure, in January that if they didn't get promoted, the shit would hit the fan, literally. So are they going for the Hail Mary, basically saying, well, let's just...
Shit or bust, isn't it?
Let's get him in as well, because we're up the shit anyway, so let's get this extra loan guy in, let's get...
Graben and Tuan Zebi.
Like these, you can understand the Graben in terms of covering Codger, but there was obviously a lap over there. But
especially knowing that we've got Hogan, who we still...
Yeah.
Those are the confusing bits, aren't they? And McCormack, these are the glaring financial errors. And, chairman can be subject to these things happening to them, For all of, just looking back at Lerner, for instance, that for all of the stupid and damaging things he did to the club, he put money up and it was badly spent at times. Yeah. You know, and it's that doesn't just apply to Bruce. You know, Di Matteo was a catastrophic mistake, I think, when you look at the overall waste there. And
to stop you there for a second, but going back to Lerner, Martin O'Neill had no real football infrastructure around him, above him. So it was in Martin we trust. So
yes,
he just kept buying. But here, we've made a point of getting a director of football in Steve Round. Wyness knows the game, and he can obviously run his eye over these things when he's signing off. I mean, you know, he knows what a good deal is. And, you know, I think he used to do deals at Everton where he would try to chop down the basic pay and put it all in bonuses and incentives. Obviously, if you're getting bonus payments, that means good things for the club rather than just having a big 40, 60,000 wage. Because, you know, Hogan allegedly 40,000. I mean, we do, you know, we've been doing the Scott Hogan touch counts. And part of the reason of that, it's not to mock the player. It's
how little he's been used. It's just remarkable.
Why did they buy him? A, because he plays in a certain way. And if he's been getting 8, 9, 12 touches and he's getting paid 40 grand. I mean, I was on TalkSport the other day and I said, you know, 40,000 for, like, you know, let's say 10, 11 touches a game. That's, you know, I wish I was earning that money for doing, you know, so little.
You can extend that out to other Lansbury's of this world. You know, they're on the similar money, but it's the length of contracts as well. That's, you know, Bree, another one.
Just to finish on the Hogan, so why are you getting this player if you don't know how you're going to play him? Same with McCormack. Why are you getting McCormack? Because it didn't seem like Di Matteo knew where he was going to play him.
No.
We don't play a way to accommodate Hogan. The way that Steve Bruce plays, you need a target man up there, and he hasn't actually got one apart from Kiernan Davis. Kiernan Davis is the only one who's been able to play successfully where you lump the ball up and he actually keeps it and holds it up for the midfield to join him. I mean, Lewis Graban was, you know, it was went missing in the final, as he has done in a few games, but it's not really down to him. I mean, that game against Middlesbrough, the second leg, people were calling him out in, you know, in the stands, but he said, look, you know, and the guy sitting next to me, I said, well, it's not his fault. He's completely isolated because we don't actually play in a way that can incorporate him. But we were stockpiling players. Bruce, that January window where, how many did he buy? About 6 or 7 permanent signings? Mm. And only, and this was going to be the future, you know, they were getting stuck in there because they wanted to build a team and this was meant to be the backbone of Villa for the next few years. And only one of those players, Conor Hourihan, actually was in the first 11 for the playoff final.
Mm.
So they were essentially stockpiling players. And, you know, I've spoken to Steve Round at one of these fan consultation group meetings and I said to him, I said, are you essentially just going around bullying other championship clubs, for want of a better word, and buying their best players? And he said, well, if we're in a position to bully them to get out of this division, we'll bully them. And this is your Lansbury's, this is your Hourihan's, this is your Hogan's, the best players of those teams. And we're stockpiling players without really, we've approached it, well, he's the best of that team, he's the best of that team, put them together, they'll be a great team. It doesn't really work like that.
And the worry is that by doing so, that we've not just created a liability financially, but we've created a liability in our squad. We haven't actually, we never built the sustained challenge that that we've talked about for two seasons, and we didn't do it over two seasons. I think we looked a team at times, but as you rightly pointed out, that it counted for little when we really needed it. That stands to be decimated. I think that we've seen already through the loan departures that changes the dynamic of the squad straight away, that the released players, and it's an old squad.
This is short-termism. You know, it's ridiculous short-termism. We'll get back to the financial meltdown, but just this isn't a structured podcast. We didn't really do a plan because it's such a mess, the club, that we might as well do a podcast to as a homage
to mirror it.
If you have a decision, Bruce, would you let him go? Would we be better off getting rid of him now?
Oh, it's a tough question. If you'd have asked me immediately after the playoff final, and I've been quite samey with Bruce, that though he's frustrated at me at times, I don't think all of the failings have been his. You know, I think there have been some players that have let him down at times, but I do think a lot of the problems on the pitch have been caused by his, despite his vast experience, some quite glaring tactical naivety or stubbornness. I'm still not undecided on that.
Yeah.
If another club came in for him, I think given where we're at in terms of the changeover of personnel at the club, it's probably the best time now if he were to go. My worry would be for Villa at the moment, given what I'm seeing in terms of financial control and decision-making, would I trust the remaining chairman, I should say, to make a call on manager, given that he thought that Di Matteo was the man? That would be my biggest concern, not losing Bruce. And it sounds like an easy cop-out, and I suppose to a degree it is. Who would we get in? Who would we attract to Aston Villa right now?
Well, it's not that. It's also who will get us out of this mess.
And that's the next thing, isn't it? That if you, assuming you could get the candidate you wanted to enter into what has to be very unpredictable, you know, the wiser commentators are correctly saying at the moment as well that you're getting a bit of positive PR out of the club by saying they've met the immediate liability, but we're far from out of the woods.
Yeah.
You know, we're not in a, you know, we're into the trap. We should be preparing for the new season now. We should be, yeah.
That's what I was going to say about Bruce is if you have to make a decision, if you're going to replace Bruce, it has to be a manager that you know will do as good as Bruce, if not better, but also a manager who has a clear vision of what Villa is going to be in the long term and to get them kind of playing that way almost like straight away.
And I have to say, are you clear on what the club's vision is?
No, that's what I'm saying, because
I'm not.
We're not talking about hindsight, for example, on Di Matteo, because I was dubious from the start. And again, I wrote articles about saying, and I think we mentioned it on this podcast, this is a guy that they're getting in who has never completed a second year at any club that he's managed. Mm. So what does that say about the guy? And what does that say about the potential of him being the man to lead Villa to the Holy Land and beyond under our new Chinese owner? Mm. Not a lot. And then Bruce comes in and, you know, this is a desperate call. I mean, the financial situation almost leads you to understand why they suddenly backtracked on this. Oh, yes, Villa engine, new way of playing, new identity. And then they thought, oh, shit, we better get Bruce in.
Yeah.
Because at least that will give us better odds of going up.
Well, you can't preach a mantra of this of the Villa engine or whatever, you know, and this idea of one club philosophy, and then appoint a football manager with quite a distinct way of working. That, you know, it's easy to say a football manager's a dinosaur and whatnot, but Bruce has had success places and has done his job well. You know, he's also had failures, and I think last season would have to count as a failure in terms of his managerial career, given the level of results.
I mean, I'm not being patronising, but he's used to teams that are, let's say, they're underdogs, like Blues, Hull, and they set up to grind results because their resources are not as good as the teams they normally play. Especially when these teams are in the Premier League. No. Now, Newcastle, for example, when they came down to the Championship, they just, if you looked at their maths, the way they spent, the difference is, I mean, we behaved like a Premier League club while we're in the Championship, but we didn't play like one. Now, Newcastle played like a Premier League club, and I don't mean like played amazingly. That was their attitude. We are a Premier League club. We're coming to play these Championship teams. And that was their attitude. And sometimes they lost, but they always made, they would win six games and then they'd lose two, and then they'd win the next 10 games and then they'd lose one or two, whatever. But they just attacked and they were, let's say, forward thinking. So yeah, when they came to town, teams thought, shit, here's that team that just dropped out of the Premier League. I bet they're good. Well, we quickly got a reputation for trying to tighten up at the back and showing our opposition far too much respect.
Newcastle last season and Wolves this season did things that we simply haven't done the whole time we've been in the Championship. When they lost a game, they then went and won 3, 4, 5. I think Newcastle went on some ridiculous 15-game winning run after some alleged blip. Two other glaring things for me in Wolves and Newcastle, similar. Far more modern, cultured managers leading. I mean, Rafa Benitez is one of the top European managers, parking all the jokes aside. And
Never had any Championship promotion experience, Rafa.
That's the Championship.
That's the Championship. But yeah, the thing is, he'd won the European Cup, for God's sake, and leagues, and Bruce hasn't, done any of that. And that's the thing, it's a different attitude. He talks a lot about, I mean, there's a classic quote I saw in the last few days about, we were paying Lansbury and that lot, these inflated wages because they have to deal with playing for Aston Villa. No, you're paying those wages so they're on an easy wicket, so they don't have to play because they can just sit on the bench, and it can work the other way where it demotivates players because they look at the length of their contract, and if they're not quite, you know, if they're battling, they know they've got a battle to get in into the first 11, and if, once they start getting frozen out for a little bit, they're like, well, I'm all right, Jack.
Oh, it's the Micah Richards rule.
Exactly. These players should be coming to Villa for the actual privilege of playing for Villa, so you know you don't have to pay them an extra 8,000 a week. If they can't play, you know, if the pressure of playing for Aston Villa is too much, why the hell did you buy them in the first place?
Well, what do these players get into football for? I mean, it's one of those modernisms.
Bruce,
I don't buy it. I'm sure some players, there's a stepping up issue, and but also I think as part of that there has to be there being a period of adapting for any footballer. I get it if you're coming from a relatively small football club, not but wanting to patronise smaller football clubs, and you're stepping into an arena like Villa Park or even an Elland, you know, Elland Roads and places, you know, they're big, big historic football clubs. But I completely agree with what you're saying. Just, you know, you're going to pay a premium as a club where sometimes, yes, you come down with more money and yada, yada, yada. But you've got the benefit of actually being able to pick the best.
Yeah.
And it was going to be my final point regarding Newcastle. Newcastle are the only other team who've had a larger wage bill in the Championship than us. It was just better spent. And that's the long and short of it. That you know, Wolves' wage bill, I wouldn't imagine. Do you know what? I'd be interested to compare Wolves' wage bill. You know, Cardiff went up with £9 million in the bank. So, you know, there's ways of doing this. You know, Warnock's not a dinosaur suddenly, is he?
No, exactly. And Warnock started in the same week as Bruce did. And
yes, indeed.
Completely outperformed him. Finished above him both times. And he actually started off below Villa as well in that week that he took over.
He did.
And hardly spent a dime compared to what Villa did.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
But to use the Lansbury example, he's fine playing for a double European champions winner and then plays very well at Villa Park when he's playing for them.
In front of that massive stadium.
Yeah, in that scary stadium that we're going to have to pay him extra money because he might, you know, it might be too much for him to shoulder. I mean, what the fuck is he talking about? Why is the manager building up all the teams that we're playing before the game, even though they haven't won away when they're coming to Villa Park, but they haven't won away all season, like Millwall, I remember, and it was 0-0. Now,
I don't get that.
If they haven't won away, then the statement before game should be right. We're very good at Villa Park and we should be winning this game. And, you know, Millwall aren't going to fancy this trip. Do what Newcastle did, just blitz teams.
Well, they did have an arrogance and a swagger. And you don't need the arrogance to the extent where you're turning up just expecting to win. Because I think that was perhaps, that was our undoing to some degree in some games.
But that was later on, yeah.
Mm. I think it's more a case of actually having the belief that you've put together, the belief in the coaching and the quality across the team, a genuine team, rather than individuals who, you know, have they bought into the fact that you're a Premier League club that's been relegated and you're going somewhere? You know, what's your ambition? Because you can be a small club and be ambitious. You know, you can Burnley are in Europe this season. You know, we've gone to them with the begging bowl, how the tide has turned. And that's proof to me that through being organised, being, you know, financially prudent. You know, Huddersfield are £350 million better off for one season in the Premier League.
Yep.
You know, that's not only the distance that they've travelled in such a short space of time, but it's the gulf that's now opening up between us and football clubs who've had far less resource at their disposal to get where they are now. That's the alarming thing.
Yeah, because as we said at the time, only Aston Villa would pick the worst. They'd actually wait a couple of seasons. We could have got relegated a bit earlier, but we'll wait for the season, which at the moment, in terms of football history, is the worst season to have got relegated, on the eve of the biggest rise in Sky TV rights, Premier League TV rights money. And so that gulf, because of that rise, that gulf increases quicker. Huddersfield's, Burnley's become financially richer than Villa in a massive way. So if you don't get up in two seasons, if you ever do get up again, and it is an if, then we could be playing Burnley in their gold-plated 20,000 stadium, and we'll have ours falling apart by that time.
We find ourselves in this bizarre, surreal world all of a sudden where, and just linking it back into our financial difficulties, that we're no longer asset rich in terms of footballers either. I think there's probably two or three who could make the step up to the Premier League. The obvious one, Grealish potentially. And
we should underline this as a point, because you're completely right about this in terms of all the loans that have come in have obviously gone out, but we've bought a lot of people. There's two types, really. There's the ones that are, let's say, off to the glue factory next. Yedinax.
It's the Villa Yedinax, Park acid bath, actually. Do you mind?
Yedinax, your Whelans, mid-30s, end of career. And then we've got the ones that your Hogan's, your Lansbury's on such good wages and long-term contracts that I would be very, very surprised, A, if they get a better wage anywhere else, and if we'll ever sell them.
Well, and sell them for anything near the... I'll give you... Yeah, exactly. It is one for you. I mean, £15 million for Jonathan Codger.
McCormack,
that was
Hogan.
12, and that was 10, was it?
Yeah, 11, 10? I mean, it's almost £40 million all in on those three strikers, and I think you would be lucky to sell them combined for like 10, would you say?
Well,
like 12, shall we say.
I mean, take it as true value. We've overpaid and they're not as good and they've not progressed. If anything, they've gone backwards, some of them. Yeah. And then you frame it in the context now with the financial situation. We're over a barrel. So, if we're in the situation now where we weren't liquid enough, we had nothing, we didn't have £2 million, we couldn't raise it. That's very concerning, and that tells me, what else have we loaned against as well? If a Jack Grealish is worth 30 million, I don't think any footballer's worth 30 million, by the way. But if Jack Grealish is worth 30 million and insert, the tabloids are already linking him to Spurs, Leicester, Newcastle, insert name of club. They offer 20 million or 15 million.
Yeah.
And we've got to deliver on in the short term. I hope it doesn't get to that. And I hope that, here's the catch 22 for you. Would you rather the club were raising expensive financing in the background to keep itself solvent, or would you rather we kept ourselves solvent by selling the crown jewels? It's a quandary for anyone to ponder, I think.
But the thing is, we haven't actually got any crown jewels beyond, let's say, Grealish and Chester.
Which was the point. I mean, I said, I think at the start of what I was saying, I think I said we've got three players. I was struggling to think of the third as it came out of my mouth. Beyond Chester. Yeah.
Bjarnason.
Well, let's just hope he has a good four
Very
five
good
games
World Cup.
I'm
hoping Iceland win the World Cup and he scores a hat-trick in the final. Then he'll be off to AC Milan for 60 million and then everything will be fine again.
Ridiculously, that probably needs to happen.
To be honest with you, that's about the only way we're going to get out of this mess in a swift manner, put it that way.
Well, considering our liabilities and that we need 40 million to comply with FFP, at least we'll break even.
Negatron alert! DEFCON 1, Chinese mismanagement of Aston Villa Football Club! Get nuclear codes off Trump! Get nuclear codes off Trump!
Well, this is the thing. This is not easy to get out.
Really not. It's a horror show, man.
Who's going to buy? I mean, like, they talk about American companies that kind of pick up football clubs. They kind of wait for them to go bust first.
Well, it's interesting. There's an investor lurking, isn't there? If you believe the is he waiting to pick over the remains?
There was a few last time, and you kind of got a feel for when something's just rumours and, when something real is actually materialising. But this isn't a quick thing. I mean, just going back to the crown jewels, we have Chester, and Grealish. And as you say, the only way that Grealish fee gets inflated is if you've got a bidding war.
Yeah.
And Grealish actually wants to go to all of the clubs involved in the bidding war.
I think it's staggering that we've gone from, I mean, the days leading up to the playoff final where there was a genuine, this would not have happened. And I don't know whether it's a good thing that it possibly has happened, because I would have worried, what would we have done if we'd have got promoted? Because would we have been cautious, or would we have been as gung-ho with how we're going about this? And I'm not sure whether perversely this could be one of the best things to happen to us, because it will hopefully bring some sanity back to things, because it couldn't have continued. Well, it obviously can't continue, but this is no way to run a football club, and there'll be more pain here. And I noticed some stuff in the press saying Grealish reportedly wants to stay in the Midlands and yada yada yada, and this is football. If a club wants a player that they, you know, Man United can't hold on to their best players, Liverpool can't hold on to their best players, if someone wants to take them and they're bigger and they've got more money, they will.
Yeah, there's also a fallacy that I want to knock on their heads here. Some fans seem to think that you sell Grealish. I mean, there's a lot of fans so willing to get rid of Grealish. They seem to be on Tony Zai's side more than they are Aston Villa's, which makes me mad. The amount of people go, oh yeah, we can sell Grealish for 40 million. That was more important that the club are solvent, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You think, well, what happens if you're just throwing Grealish into the fire? I mean, we're still in the same position and we don't go, you know, anywhere with it. At least if you somehow keep hold of Grealish, you've got a chance next season. There seems to be this fallacy that, you know, we get rid of all these players and then our super talented under 23 squad will lift us up to glory. Well, the newsflash about these under 23 team, the big newsflash is, because it gets hyped up on social media and people don't really read into the context, or they don't actually go and watch the team.
Which we have done. You more than me, admittedly.
Yeah, or they don't contemplate the history of youth players getting into professional teams. That under 23 team, I mean, other people are saying, oh yeah, one of the best under 23 teams in the country. And you think, hang on a minute, they're a second tier team.
Yeah.
They failed in the playoffs the last few seasons. Well, they didn't even get in the playoffs last season, but the season before they did. This season just gone, they obviously did. There's 12 teams above them in the Premier League One. They're in Premier League Two. So, yes, they won a cup. But in 2013, Aston Villa had one of the best youth teams in Europe. And indeed, they won the Next Gen tournament, beating Chelsea in the final and obviously beat a few of the decent European sides on the way. Now, out of that team, and that team was much better than the one we have now, Jack Grealish is the only player still at Aston Villa making any moves. The rest, if you ask me who were the most successful players from that team that were the best youth team in Europe, Callum Robinson, Preston, and Sammy Carruthers, who was the captain of the Next Gen winning
last
team.
Last seen pissing in a pint glass at Cheltenham.
Yeah, apart from that, he's kind of a bit player, squad player for Sheffield United. The rest are either in Scotland, Ireland, or in the lower leagues. So that kind of tells you how many of the homegrown youth players actually kind of really make it. I mean, you know, when we're in the Premier League, Luke Moore popped up and then disappeared.
Well, I was just thinking back to the FA Youth Cup winning team, actually, because that's the other great example, isn't it, of how it was the team that beat the Everton team featuring Rooney, a very young Wayne Rooney. I think he had... Was it maybe Kieran Clark? I think was perhaps one of the players to graduate, perhaps the Moore brothers, or certainly Luke Moore. I think you're making a very valuable point, and it's one of the ones that there's two players at the moment who their names get bandied around, often at times of desperation or when one of the more senior players isn't doing very well. I think one was Hepburn Murphy, who's chronically injured, held the club to ransom over a contract. People forget that.
Yeah.
And actually, when I've seen him, not been overly wowed. The other one is O'Hare, who looks to have bags of talent, but reminds me very much of a very young Jack Grealish. There's a development cycle there that you've got to allow to happen. And do they develop into the next Grealish, or do they, as you say, they just fade and they don't develop that next level?
Yeah, I mean, the defender's not too bad, Suleiman. But again, he's a couple of seasons off and he hasn't got the size, and O'Hare hasn't got the size at the moment. I mean, I think Grealish is a bigger player than
O'Hare. You can see the physical development in a Grealish over the last two seasons that's not just him, maturing
season.
Physically. That's some serious gym time as well. And
you know, obviously, when you go and see the under-23s, it's a different product.
Is, yeah.
And you see the games and then you see how their performances translate to social media. Media and you're like, it's interesting.
Yes, it's creative license is sometimes applied. I think
it sounds like God, that O'Hare sounds like Pele on Twitter, but in real life, we're not saying he's bad. We're just saying there's overhype here, and it's just it's bullshit, basically. We are not going to...
It's not going to be the Brucey
sell
Babes.
Sell off Grealish, Chester, and then suddenly have the Brucey Babes roar us back.
But where does this... So where, you know, you look where we are now. I mean, where does this leave us now? We're realistically a short summer away from our third season in the Championship. We can't possibly have a transfer policy of any description in place at the moment, surely. Yeah, have we got anything left to borrow against? I mean, this is a defining season, and it's very, very concerning that we're approaching it in such bad shape for me. That, as I say, we should be sat on the beach retweeting stupid links to stupid players again. This is a very unwanted but actually very troubling thing. That this is a desperate cycle of financial trouble we need to get out of pretty quickly for me.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't look good. At the end of the day, there was just so much flab about the... Yeah. The way this business of Aston Villa has operated, Bruce should have had a leaner squad, but a team playing in a, let's say, a more fitting way. Aston Villa should be coming to any Championship away ground, and the team should be thinking, should it's Aston Villa, as Newcastle approached it, as we've already said. You know, people say, well, in the Championship, it's, you know, there's no time to be arrogant, but I think people know what we're talking about. So in terms of the future, it's 2 weeks of seeing how this plays out. I've been told by one person in particular to expect madness, and I think that's...
I like madness. I like that. If there's one thing with this, with these kinds of incidents, especially with the fallout from it, is enough seems to be making the mainstream press, and there's enough sources knocking around who are just, I think, not only feel that people need to know, but absolutely flabbergasted. Like us, and I'm sure like many Villa fans,
yeah,
quite how bad it is.
So in terms of Dr. Tony, what's the future for him? Do you want him at the club come the start of the season?
I'm interested to see what happens on Company's House the next few days. Jury's out on everyone for me at the moment. There's something going on with the filings around Recon and Aston Villa Football Club Limited. It seems to be to do with shares.
Yeah, people would have seen that tweet. Obviously, Colin Moore's been speaking to the Dr. Tony via Twitter. He's obviously told him there's 15 million loan, but somebody proposed that these movements at Company's House, maybe that 50 million is some kind of share incentive. There's basically shares involved in that, so it's not actually a loan.
Don't know. There's a couple of ways of looking at it. Is my reading is that it depends where the money's coming from, and is it a loan that's being pumped in? I think if there's going to be some sort of share issue, who's that money? Who's it going to be owned by? How's it going to be distributed? It's interesting because obviously the Recon Group is the 100% shareholder at the moment. So you would have thought if money's coming in and being injected into the club, well, you wouldn't need a new share issue because you've got your Recon controlling interest there. You just flood the money in. I think it's a watch this space, and that's why the jury's out for me. That it's all well and good investment arriving into the club, but you know, if that's £50 million, what's the true cost of that? You know, that's like saying, well, we sold Amavi for £8 million, but we didn't really, you know. And again, it's the same with the immediate $6 million loan. Well, it's $2 million immediately and four from China, that is, and $4 million loaned from elsewhere. That's just to get us through the week. I need more facts. I think I need more transparency from the chairman. And I think that where he lost a lot of face against something that's apparently very important to him is that his communication. You look at the statement that he put out after the defeat to Fulham. It's very cryptic at the time, and it makes a bit of sense now. But he's been absent since as well, really. A couple of tweets. That's not an acceptable way to be dealing with a crisis, especially when you're in charge and
you know, the statement about Wyness being suspended, you know, these kind of three-sentence statements, really, I mean, A, they're buying time, but B, you need to give a little bit more context because you're just fueling the fire. I mean, in the media and, you know, through supporters and, you know, obviously the social media nowadays, that if you can cut off a few avenues so people, you know, don't spread the fire further, then you should do. So a little bit more context.
I think the one final bit I'd tag on to the end of that too is that as a football club, this eroded what I'm about to say under Lerner to some degrees. That Villa have always had good stature for having a degree of class about them and a professionalism. And
yeah,
I think you
gone.
Know where I'm coming from. That goodwill is eroded. And in football, you can be a laughingstock because you get a hammer in now and then, or you get relegated out of a division as we did. But when you start to lose, when other fans are looking at your club and starting to say, fucking hell, you're a bit tin pot. And making comparisons to Portsmouth and Leeds, irrelevant of how things pan out. I mean, the word I suppose, the easy word to say is that it's embarrassing. But it's not something that ever, you know, my supporting time with Aston Villa, that you have embarrassing moments, you have embarrassing Saturdays, as I've just said. But this is a huge embarrassment that we'll take a lot of recovery from, because essentially we haven't been paying our bills. And given the amount of money that we had coming into the club and the waste that apparently has been going on and the dubious financial transactions that surround it, and what underpin our football club, I think it puts us about as far to the bottom as possible.
Yeah, and this is why you used the, obviously, the Wizard of Oz analogy at the start of the show, which 2 years ago, when I got that picture designed up, Tony Jaa as the Wizard of Oz, because the whole premise of the Wizard of Oz is in Oz, this wizard is all powerful and promises this and promises that, and... You know, we've had our Wizard of Shy promising, or Shite, should I say, promising us Champions League. And, why just one Champions League? Maybe we win it and win it again. Also that, you know, we're going to be one of the top three clubs in the world. And when I ask him a question about what he needs to see to trigger the expansion plans, rebuilding of the North Stand and, you know, potentially getting up to 50,000. He said, why 50,000? Maybe 60,000, maybe 80,000. And you think everything this guy says is exaggerated and hyperbole. And it's obviously something, it's a mantra of his to be positive, positive, super positive, extra super positive. And
just to interject, I mean, one final thing I'd tag onto that. I loved the story that broke along with all this, and it sort of links to what you were saying about when Dr. Tony was given his briefing shortly before the defeat to Fulham in the week leading up to Fulham about the two possible outcomes, obviously one being promotion, and then which they talked it through with him first, and then the second being what would happen if Villa didn't get promoted. Yeah. No one, when they concluded the presentation, he didn't say anything for 3 minutes. I mean, that system is like, does not compute, you know, the prospect of, and that's the reality of where we're at, isn't it? That he didn't, is he deluded? I don't know.
Yeah, well, in that first meeting, when I asked him, a structured question, I said, over the last, like, let's say 30 years or so of supporting Aston Villa, we've seen that even when we were like the champions of Europe and the league winners, there was a certain attendance, and we are not talking like super attendances. So what has to happen, like on the pitch and off the pitch, to justify an expansion of Villa Park that's been mentioned over the last few years? And he just sat there staring in space for what must have been a good minute. So there's, you know, it's a round table. There's Tony Shaw, his sidekick. There's Keith Wyness there. And then there's about 8 supporter representatives. And I asked this question about, you know, what has to take place. And he just stares in front of him. But literally, everybody's like looking at each other around the table, like, you know, has he short-circuited or something? You know, what's happened? And it was kind of strange, and it was like, you know, unexpected as well. And then after about a minute, Keith Wyness stepped in to save his blushes and said, I think this is, you know, one for me to field. No, it's not. it's not
this Keith, robot.
It's this guy here. Just plug him back in. But then when you know, after Keith said whatever he said, all lies.
Chinese flag.
He said, why 50, maybe 60, maybe 80,000. And it's like, there's no way there's going to be an 80,000 Villa Park in my lifetime, I don't think. Not after how those guys continued their business from that meeting onwards, put it that way.
It's all good news.
It's all good fun. I saw one tweet to the Twitter account, which is at Aston Villa Pod. Somebody saying, it'll all be all right, so let's not have doom and gloom. He's talking about the show. And I think I just sent him a load of laughing emoji cons and said, you know, wake up. This is bloody serious, mate. Because it is. It's you know, there's a lot of people out there. It's still this weird thing that Dr. Tony, because they thought they loved him, they can't change their view now.
Like an abused partner in a relationship, isn't it? Who just can't, you know.
It is. Can't spell it out to them. They refuse to believe it. They don't see it's real. Oh, well, you're going to find out soon enough. On that, there's a bit more of a serious podcast. Sorry, it's a bit rambly.
Serious issues,
but it's serious issues, but also there's a lot of... Well, there's been a lot of smoke and mirrors from the owners, put it that way. And then also there's a lot of, we don't know how this is going to turn out in the wash. This talk of loans, talk of share issue, something's happening behind the scenes. You know that from Companies House. So as every week goes by, I'm sure the picture will change slightly. I mean, we're actually at a juncture where we literally have to just cross our fingers at the moment.
Oh, my goodness. It's true. It's true.
Another problem is to keep this podcast going, we really do need to get some more patrons on board or else we'll be going into liquidation also.
We're probably more solvent than the Villa actually at this point for the first time.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I should just stop this whole thing, this My Old Man Said thing straight away. This is one of the problems for My Old Man to grow. A, you need to be in the Premier League because it's a different ball game. And B, you're not going to grow your audience because it's shrinking. There's a reason why you close the upper tier in the Trinity End. There's a reason, like, when, you know, if you're playing that kind of football and you're live on TV, I can't imagine young fans around the world going, oh, yeah, I want to be a Villa fan.
Ooh, Villa versus Rotherham.
Our potential audience is shrinking. So, you know, if My Old Man Said was a business, you had to close it down a long, long time ago. So we do need your support because we've been swamped by, you know, the clickbait of these shitty sites and how the Birmingham Mail has to do their business now. And if you like what we do, then we will do more and we'll do it better and we'll carry on being inventive. So please do support as a patron. Go to myomansaid.com and click on the patron link at the top. Thank you very much. Also, we have a competition.
Chinese flag.
First person to take that Chinese flag off the top of the Doug Ellis stand, Witten Lane stand, wins 2 weeks in Beijing, where you'll get to stay at the Walt Recon land.
Yeah.
And we'll give you a gun, assault rifle, and a free Uber to the Recon Group HQ.
It's like Jurassic World, but it's just filled with Agbon Lahore and Keith Wyness's carcass.
Anyway, if you can get that flag and not get arrested, maybe under the cover of night, that'd probably be the best time to go. Anyway, we'll leave that one with you. And on a final note, please do obviously review the show and subscribe and all that stuff. And obviously share to get the word out and tell your Villa supporting friends who have a sense of humour and half a brain at least. Try to get another show out in the next couple of weeks at least. Actually, we're going to put some other shows out, different things, probably one on safe standing, and put a couple of things that we've recorded before, but like in a remixed kind of fashion. But until then, and until next time, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
Snodgrass.
We love you.
Come back, Snodgrass. Don't leave. Don't leave Grealish.
Bring Terry with you.
Subliminal. Don't leave Jack. Stay. If you're listening to this, Jack, you got your headphones on and you're falling asleep. Subliminal messages.
Sam Johnston.
Stay a villa. Chris Samba. Don't go anywhere. Stay, Chris.
Mark Bunn's in goal. Mark Bunn.
Mark Bunn, you must leave immediately.
Can't we use him as collateral as part of this payment? Can't we just...
Yeah, who else? We need to send some subliminal... Chester. Chester, you just got married. Don't upset the apple cart. Stay at Villa. That's the only reason she married you, because you were an Aston Villa player. Stay at Villa. Anybody else? Bjarnason, run for your life.
Could get away while he still can.
Make sure Iceland win the World Cup, score a hat-trick in the final. Secure our £50 million bounty.
My old man said,
we bow before you.
He came to be one of us. He still wanted to wear the claret and blue.
There can be only one Highlander.
Who is this man you speak of?
Snodgrass.
Time for a special edition of Twitter with Fulham. 22nd of May 2018. So, it looks like there'll be almost as many AVFC fans in the FFC end on Saturday. reminder that those people are breaking Rule 2.2 of the FA's ticketing terms and conditions. So, if you do notice anyone that isn't singing at hashtag full volume, it's your duty to report them to the nearest steward. Health and safety notice. We can't have the White Wall collapsing. Our end could be soaked in sun, as you may have seen over the weekend at the Manchester United match. Please bring enough water for your needs and get yourself sun lotioned up before leaving home. 38,000 clappers at Wembley isn't enough in my opinion. Everybody shall bring two and clap them together to make a real noise with 76,000 clappers. Hashtag full volume. Songs for Saturday, going to Wembley. With a lot of people going who probably don't know the words to some of our songs, I thought it might be an idea to publish a song sheet that people could print off and take with them. It would take an eternity to type them all out, so please add them here. Hashtag full volume, hashtag FFC, hashtag come on you whites.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favourite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.